Hello, it's Kelly Lovely here. Welcome to episode one of Bookends Cafe, the podcasting series for professional women who might perhaps like to wonder what the world does look like through somebody else's eyes. Before I get started as to what we're going to be talking about today, I'd like to introduce a quote that I read recently, and it goes something like this. There are times when I want to rule the world, and many moments when all I want to do is walk away from my career and have a different life. Maybe go back to being a waitress like I was when I was 19. Something where I would just go home at the end of the day instead of lumbering around with the weight of work in my head. That's a quote from Mia Friedman. Certainly the intent of this podcast is not to introduce everything that we talk about as our original work. We're hoping to steal a lot of other ideas, and we base this podcast on what we know to be the format we like, the Lee Sales and Annabelle Crabb podcast of Chat 10 Looks 3. Now I'd like to introduce my other podcasting partner, Judith Leacock. She has in front of me a recipe. What have we got here today?
Well, you see, what you're looking at is the ultimate in chocolate cake. And, of course, as we all know, we're aficionados of healthy eating, and this is completely unhealthy. But the reason it's on here and the reason we're having it today is because this is based on a recipe from a colleague's grandmother. And what is really interesting, we think we're so clever these days. We think we know all about nuts and seeds, and we know all about all these, extra vitamins and things. But we don't actually have to make things up because we don't have the ingredients. This lady, this grandmother, had to make a cake. She had no eggs. She had no special types of flour.
Yeah.
She had to make it. So in this cake, there are no eggs. Mm. There's actually vinegar as part of the recipe. It's a base flour with a little bit of cornstarch.
Mm-hmm.
It's things that we don't think about because we have an array of supermarket items to choose from.
Yes.
So it really attracted me because I thought, we take things so for granted that we're so clever and that we know so much and we have so much information. We're absolutely flooded with it. And we have to make choices.
Mm.
Whereas in this lady's day, they didn't have choices to make. Mm. They didn't have the products. Mm. So, for years after the war, there were no eggs.
Mm.
So, I just thought, I'll give it a whirl. And I have to say, and I can see you munching on it, it is delicious.
It's delicious.
It's delicious. And you wouldn't know that it's not your traditional baked cake.
One of the things that my granny used to always say is when you get the door shut in your face, you've got to find a way to jump through the window.
Very
well, you eat your piece because I'm halfway through eating mine. What we're going to talk about, guys, is actually, I guess, some of the things that we find ourselves as actually having been doing. And the purpose of what we're doing has come about with a conversation that we had recently with our website designer. As you know, we're establishing a business, Bookends Leadership. Our website designer, Sujatha Prestons, said, look, what you ladies do are more than what many people do in a week, let alone in a day. And I'm not saying that because we're super important. It's just that we read a lot. We jump online and look in LinkedIn and Twitter and other social media sites a lot. And probably we talk through a lot of stuff and we make a lot of assumptions about what we're doing. What we're going to first talk about, it's something that I actually saw probably a little while ago in New South Wales, the New South Wales Roads Goal Zero campaign. I saw it when I was watching the Western Sydney Wanderers play Sydney FC at Allianz Stadium up in the most humongous lights that I've ever seen before. And I've actually asked Judith, does this Goal Zero marketing campaign actually work? Does it reduce road fatalities or at-risk behaviours on the roads at all?
Well, there's a multitude of researchers that will give you diametrically opposed views. Some will say yes and some will say no. And because it's very hard to measure change of behaviour, because what you're measuring is somebody dead or alive.
Mm.
Did they survive an accident? Did they cause the accident through bad behaviour? So it's a little bit, I think it's a difficult one. But what I think is good about this campaign is for the first time they're actually using proper sociological and psychological principles.
Okay.
Because one of the first principles of a dialogue is you'd start with heart.
Okay.
Now you think of the message. What's the first message that comes across is a gentleman being asked a question, but then connecting it to family. So heart, you've got an emotion in there.
Mm-hmm.
So people listen to that message, even though they're not necessarily connecting it to driving behaviour, but they're connecting it to an emotion. And if you want to sell something, Or if you want to lead people, you have to take emotion. You have to have the emotional piece in there as part of the dialogue.
Yeah, and right.
As they say, dialogue starts with a heart.
Yeah, right.
And I think they have done that.
So you're saying that perhaps finding a root cause or finding a problem and legislating straight away isn't effective?
No.
Do you think it was ever effective?
No, I don't. Well, I think, you know, people would claim it was because in some very highly regulated industries, they just say, oh, look, you know, we've gone from 10 to zero or whatever, and they'll quote the zero very proudly.
Mm.
And so, yes, but what everybody knows is that was not sustainable.
Mm.
So you might have had zero after this, you know, corrective action was put in place because of an incident.
Mm.
But then look at the stats 2 years later. They're absolutely back, often worse than they were pre-legislation or pre-directive or, you know, corrective action. So you don't get a change of behaviour. All you get is a response, an immediate response, and that immediate response will give you a result that you can be proud of.
Mm.
But you shouldn't be proud of it if you're the leader, because a leader has to do things that are sustainable. And sustainable only happens when you look at emotion, you look at all the senses, you look at everything involved in it, so you get a lasting change in behaviour.
So are you saying that the road, whether it be the Goal Zero campaign or any campaign which is binary towards zero, it has a start, it has a finish, and it has, I guess, a hearts and minds approach. What do you say then to those health and safety practitioners and professionals that are listening that believe zero is an aspiration that never goes away?
Oh, look, I think in any role you have to create the aspiration that fits your particular circumstance or your particular industry.
Mm.
But I think what's happened is people have missed that social psychology piece that puts the humanistic behaviours and the humanistic person front and centre. So if you can't connect your aspiration to the humanistic type of even language, you know, the semiotics should be about people, then, you know, it's not really a very good aspiration, or it's not one that's going to be achieved. Because if, unless you take the people with you and have them change their behaviour, nothing's going to happen. Mm. We have seen, you know, the best thing that's reduced the road toll or, you know, harming people is the double demerits on public holidays.
Mm.
Less people are actually booked for speeding on those 3 and 4 and Easter, you know, 4 days than in the preceding 3 months. So we actually do change our behaviour for some of these quite punitive type things. But is that sustainable? No, because as I said, it was those 4 days we did really well. Then what happened? As soon as midnight came,
we had
that terrible accident, high speed, 3 people killed, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning after the break. So, yeah, it is really difficult.
There's a good sort of evidence there that the brain's reticular activating system does work well, but it's limited in time. So for those of you that are thinking about a Goal Zero campaign or a long-term, lengthy zero target, best to think of it as being something that starts and finishes.
Yes.
Okay, terrific. So what we've also been doing is I personally am establishing a white paper. It's called The Bookends Game, which I'll make sure I flick as a web link on the bottom of this podcast. But one of the things that we're calling out in The Bookends Game and The Bookends Game Index is the need for people to connect with their workplaces. I've interviewed 2 people for the white paper this week. One is Jesse Williams from the Groundswell Project, and the other is Drewy, who you might know in the health and safety industry as Hard Hat Mentor. Both talk about the workplace and people's social and emotional well-being as being quite connected. So if I could recommend anybody for you to connect with LinkedIn or to see the activities of Hard Hat Mentor and the Groundswell Project with some tips and pointers about social and emotional well-being connectedness, I'd certainly recommend what it is that they're doing for you to consider for your workplace. That was really yummy. It's all over me though. I think you needed needed eggs in a cake for a reason. It's very crumbly. That's okay. Good day to wear a white top. So the next one on our list is actually what we thought you might like, because maybe you're wondering what the world looks like through our eyes and what we've been reading. So this week I'm actually finished the Mia Friedman book, Work, Strife, Balance. And whilst it's a book, I know Mia Friedman being in the media is quite a disarmer. She likes to disarm women. I think she likes to shock women. And I know she's got a niche product. Of course, it's not niche. It's a mainstream product. But she's obviously one of those very early adopters to, beyond 30, talk about things like infertility and talk about abortion and talk about all the things that we know to be true. it's certainly not the repository for this podcast to talk about that, but I think one of the things from a takeaway that I have from her book is really three things that I think all professional women should really try and anchor themselves to. And certainly one of the things that I know about my circle of friends is that, rightly or wrongly, my friendships are mostly my professional networks, and I do think that you can be friends and have professional friendships with colleagues that you currently work with, have previously worked with, or would like to work with someday. So Mia Freeman talks obviously and openly about the importance of friendships, and I certainly think that that carries across into professional working lives. The other thing she talks openly about is just to surround yourself with women, particularly if you're in a male-dominated industry or if you're in an industry that happens to be female-dominated. There's never a better time to actually consider the soft skills and the energy that females bring into workplaces. But this is where I disagree with Mia Freeman. It's not a gender issue. Women do have soft skills and they're good collaborators and communicators, but I've seen plenty of men do that as well. I've also seen plenty of men, and Judith, you probably have some examples, who don't like the scrum of the Australian boardroom. They like being able to spend time with a balanced life.
Yeah, as you say, Kelly, you're right. There are a lot of men who bring people with them, who collaborate, who listen, who respond appropriately, who are inclusive. And like you, I don't like the gender card. I think you can easily play the gender card, and that's great, you know. But what is it actually telling us? It's not really telling us much, and it's not helping us.
Mm.
Women and men are inherently different.
Mm-hmm.
We're genetically wired differently.
Yep.
Our disadvantage is we're genetically wired to do things. We get things done.
Mm.
And that is a disadvantage because we do everything.
Yep.
We multi-skill, we multitask. Men cannot.
Yep.
Men cannot multitask.
Yep.
They can multi-skill because that's intellectual,
mm-hmm.
but they can't multitask, because you ask any woman who's, you know, got a partner anywhere,
mm-hmm.
they can only do one thing at a time. And unfortunately what happens is, because women are impatient, we go and do it.
Yes.
So we're our own worst enemies.
Yes.
Because what happens then is that bloke gets a promotion because he's done his one thing really well.
Yeah.
We've done seven things but nobody's noticed.
Yep.
And we don't put a hand up and say, you know, we were able to achieve this. Because we do tend to then look like we're dabbling.
Yep.
Right? Yep. So we have to learn to be not like men,
yep.
but to think realistically about what we're doing in each role,
yep.
achieve an outcome, have it clearly defined, achieve it, and then celebrate the achievement.
Yep.
We don't do that either, you know, whereas men have a tendency, as they do in sport,
yep.
what do? As soon as they get anything, it's a big celebration. Women quietly doing everything
yep.
without that celebration. So those are the sort of differences I see, and I don't put it under gender.
Yep.
I put it under ways of thinking.
Yeah, nice.
And being.
Nice. Yeah. So certainly if you do feel as though this is actually a forum for just the girls, you have to be mistaken. Yes, we are two professional women. We do have a man in the room. My 35-kilo black Labrador is with us, but certainly we don't want for this to ever be us bashing upon who we love and who we have worked with and been sponsored by, just the really good guys that are in Australian workplaces. Okay. The next one that we wanted to talk to you about, and perhaps see whether you think what the world looks like through our eyes, is a book by Jason Fox called The Game Changer. Judith.
Yeah, look, it's a good book, but I do have to say that I'm probably a little bit biased because I've been around for a long time.
No.
Yes, it's a terrible admission. And for years, you know, I wouldn't accept I was a baby boomer. I denied it. Even at conference presentations, I put the numbers up and I'd say where I was. Actually,
here's a mirror.
I know. It's terrible. A lot of it is simply the motivational piece. And we all know if we want to get the best out of others, we have to motivate them.
Mm-hmm.
We have to give them a purpose and a reason, and we have to follow through.
Yep.
If we want to achieve ourselves, we have to understand our own internal motivation.
Yep.
So for me, the book was was basically what I already knew, just presented a different way. But the three things I took out of it,
mm-hmm.
chunks of the book, and I think it's really important because the title, Game Changer, I mean, you know, it's very much putting in the connotation of a game. But what he's saying is it's not about turning work into a game. It's about recognising that work is already a game.
Mm.
It has rules. It has goals. It has feedback. It has everything that a game has.
Yeah.
So just accept that it is a game.
Yep.
You know, don't try to deny. Yep. Don't be a denier because it won't work. And sometimes we have to look at the game and think, we can do this better.
Yeah.
and absolutely say it. If you see it, say it.
Yeah.
So that I thought was, although he wasn't as strong as I am in saying the see it, say it,
yep.
he was just talking about it being a game and the motivational piece. So
yep.
I added my little flavour in there. The second thing I liked about it was is that you need to craft visibility and structure around what you do at work. And I think, and I talk to people a lot when I'm talking to young women who are trying to move forward, it's so important, that visibility. You have to be visible, but you have to be visible in the right way.
Mm.
Your visibility has to match the game.
Mm.
Otherwise, you're like a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah.
And, yes, you might look brilliant, you might sound brilliant, but are you going to get anywhere? No, because you're not going with the game. Mm. You can only change a game if you're part of it.
Yeah.
So that visibility piece, but fitting into whatever workplace you're in the right way.
Yep.
To keep that visibility. And that's what he talks about, crafting visibility.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing I like, I must have been in it. This is a bit of a quote I took from his book. Progress is inconvenient. Leaders need to manage the process and managers need to be empowered to lead.
Mm.
And you've really got to, and that's the quote directly from his book, you've really got to understand the difference between the manager and the leader. But in this case, when you're trying to progress, as a leader, you do manage, but you let everyone else lead.
Mm.
And that is a huge issue for some people, to actually let go of their leadership persona to suddenly say, well, we need to move forward, we need to progress, this is our plan, but I need the managers to lead it.
Mm.
And I thought that, I have to say, for his whole book, that was the best message for people to understand.
Yeah.
And it's the one I know certainly newer managers and particularly younger women who are competing with a lot of men, that's the one that they forget, that you actually do have to come in and out of leading, managing.
Yes. And you would have loved to have been sitting watching Judith with that soliloquy. Her arms were waving, her eyes were open. Her mouth was wide. It's lovely having someone who's got a passion and interest in a topic and watching them explain their craft. So the last thing we wanted to actually see through our eyes this week is a movie that we've both watched quite recently called The Founder. So before we jump into what our takeaways were for The Founder, obviously about the McDonald's story in America in the 1950s, was that we have a coaching and business mentoring business, particularly for professionals in the services or the health and safety industry who are stuck. They may be stuck physically and openly, okay with it, or they may be seeking additional challenges and are becoming disengaged by their work. Look, it's a good segue because I thought The Founder was a very good story for someone who took McDonald's to the next level. But interestingly, it wasn't the McDonald brothers, was it?
Actually, I think they were your classic stuckness. Stickiness, whatever you want to call it, because they
was not the cake, the opposite of your cake.
That's right, the opposite of my cake, which is not sticky at all. But they had produced something that they knew was right, and they had a methodology of work that was right, and they didn't think it could go any further because they were stuck in the view that their work game was running smoothly. They decided it worked, it would be dangerous to go outside that. So I think there was a combination of fear, there was a combination of pride in that they got it right.
Yep.
They were producing a quality product very efficiently, cost effectively. Why change? Mm. And this is, if you put the analogy back to yourself and in parts of your career, and I know we've both been in situations where we're doing really well, we're on top of the job, we're good at it, comfortable. Why would I put myself through anything else? Why change?
Mm.
But, of course, you outgrow it.
Yep.
And they didn't outgrow it, but then they were of an age where they wouldn't have. They were quite contented with what they had. And then along comes somebody who's a bit entrepreneurial. And, of course, then the story just goes on from there.
Yep.
But I just felt they were stuck not for all negative reasons.
Mm.
They were stuck because they felt their game was over.
Yep.
They played it. They won it. They'd set the rules and they were functioning.
Mm. I think my takeaway from that story was by the end of it, I think they played a bad game. They did sort of realise that the royalties, the monies, the accolades that they were promised didn't happen. So there was a bad negotiation, which really probably put them in the movie anyway, with a bad taste in their mouth. I think had they played their time, had the time again, they would have really exercised what Carol Dweck calls a growth mindset. Their mindset was very closed, very binary. What they had was right. There wasn't any change. And look, unfortunately, it really did probably lead to a very different retirement that they had originally planned. So that's it. That's a wrap. Our first podcast of the Bookends Cafe. Thank you, Judith.
Thank you, Coach. It was lovely.